This is Women's Health Today, about women for everyone. How does being a woman or a man impact your health? Does health and other policy adequately address systemic problems and root causes of ill health? Women's Health Today looks at health from an interdisciplinary and women-centered perspective, examining the many biological, psychological, environmental, and social factors affecting health. I'm your host, Giovanna Rossi. Today on the show, we're talking about the impact of voter engagement in the 2012 election and how this relates to the health of women and families. Are voters being encouraged or discouraged to vote this year? Is ID required at polling places? Who is responsible for voter participation? How does the voting process impact the issues we care about? Here to discuss this are my guests, Adrienne Barboa, Field Director at Strong Families New Mexico, Maggie Toulouse Oliver, Bernalillo County Clerk, and Lori Wiocki, Director of Native American Voters Alliance. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So political analysts are saying that women will decide this election. Women's issues, especially reproductive rights, women's health care, and economic equality have become a main focus throughout the past several months. These issues will be on the forefront of voters' minds come November, and the voting process will be an opportunity for women and men to voice their opinions. Or will it? County Clerk Toulouse Oliver, let me start with you. You're responsible for conducting major elections in Bernalillo County. To what extent does that responsibility extend to ensuring or encouraging voter participation and even turnout?
I believe that's a fundamental part of my job. I believe that participation in our democracy is absolutely essential. If we don't have high participation, then we don't have a true healthy democracy. So I do believe that it's my job to make sure that voting is easy, that polling places are accessible, that people can register to vote conveniently. They don't experience a lot of problems when they go to the polls or when they try to register to vote. And so I do believe it's an important part of my job, not just to clear that path, but to encourage people to participate as well.
Okay, that's a tall order. I mean, that really is a big thing to do and to try to do well. I'm going to bring Lori and Adrienne into the conversation in just a moment, but would you please give us a little synopsis of the events that have happened in the last few weeks and months regarding voter registration and voter participation in New Mexico?
Well, sure. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but we were talking right before the show about the voter confirmation mailing that the Secretary of State did. And so just to address that directly in a moment, more globally speaking, obviously, in a presidential election year, we are experiencing voters and people out in the community being more aware of the election. And so really a lot of people scrambling to get registered to vote, a lot of organizations out there doing voter registration and education. So this is our, the busiest time in a 4-year cycle right now. My office, of course, is working really hard to process voter registrations and things like that. Specific to the confirmation mailing that was done, there's been some information about that in the news lately. In the United States, the federal government permits states to conduct periodic cancellation of voters who have moved or who are who have moved and who are no longer participating in voting, and sometimes that's called a purge. It's formally called the voter cancellation process. But basically what the Secretary of State did was mail a postcard to voters just asking them if they're still living at their current address or if they have updated their current address, giving them the opportunity to update and respond to potentially remove them from being considered for removal, if that makes sense. The confirmation is for the purpose of allowing voters that opportunity to say, no, I do want to stay on the rolls. Whether or not I vote, I want to stay on the rolls. The other way that folks can confirm their intent to stay on the rolls is by, of course, voting. And, of course, we want to encourage everyone to just go out and exercise that right to vote. But the thing that I try to remind people about this process, this cancellation process, is that pursuant to federal law, it takes a long time. It takes 4 years. It takes two federal election cycles for people to not respond and then not vote for them to be considered for removal from the rolls. So everyone who got that mailing this year, right now, if they responded to the mailing, they're fine. If they go out and vote this November, they're going to be fine. They're going to stay on the rolls and they're going to get taken off of that list, that potential removal list.
Okay, good clarification there. Lori, what are the challenges, generally speaking, for voter engagement this year? And then we can get into some of the specifics.
Sure. I think just to add a little bit more, several of our folks received some of those mailings from the Secretary of State's office. And we were deeply concerned because it sort of threatens that you could be considered inactive if you don't vote. But really, we're just encouraging, whether or not you received one of those mail pieces, to go and vote, that you're not going to be purged for this upcoming election. So just make sure that you get down to your local voting convenience center and vote, right? So just to allay people's concerns and fears about that. I think in terms of... I would say here in Bernalillo County, we actually have a good county clerk. Shout out to Ms. Toulouse Oliver.
Thank you.
In terms of, really making voting a lot more accessible. In a lot of the rural areas, like, they'll have early vote sites, but they're not open all the time. They're sharing, a lot of the resources from one rural area to the next. And so you might have early vote for, like, 1 or 2 days in one of the pueblos, and then it sort of is open for a couple hours and closing. So it's a little bit tougher to get people to understand that early in-person voting sites are available to folks, and that people can, it's a scheduling thing. It still becomes a scheduling thing as opposed to having them open and more accessible kind of at people's leisure or convenience. But the good news is that they are out in these rural areas, not everywhere, but in a lot of places, making it a little bit easier for folks to go out and vote, right?
Let me ask Adrienne, how do some of the challenges for voter engagement and voter participation impact voters that care about issues important to women and families? So who, I guess, is what I'm asking, who are the voters being impacted?
Well, actually, so I've been doing some trainings across the state where we're just having really more, not so much a trainings, but community dialogue with communities across the state. And part of the dialogue we ask folks, like, what are the things that hold you back from being participating civically? And, so many times the responses are the pieces around the distrust of government, the pieces that, that they don't have a history or haven't felt, or that it's just hard on a day that's full. So then we follow that activity with asking folks, what is something that would get you closer to wanting to do this? Or what would your ideal voting situation look like? And we've worked with young people, elders, communities of all different backgrounds, and for the most part, folks are saying we need to make it fun. There should be, we should have the day off. And some people are responding like, there's other places that do it on a weekend, or how do we make it that kind of accessible? I too want to give some shout outs to our Bernalillo County Clerk for because we will be able to access those voting sites. And I know for myself, even, that's going to make it easier for me. But with, like Lori was responding to, across the state, it's not that. That's not definitely the case. And I do think that it's communities of color impact. I think it's rural communities. I think that, across the board, folks not feeling like they have, they're inundated with messages through the media and not feeling like they have some kind of way to be informed or participate throughout the year. So that's some of the ways we've been talking about how groups on the ground, working with, on the different rights, immigrant rights, women's rights, how they're engaging year-round, and how hopefully folks can start to, engage year-round and then possibly increase the number during this election cycle.
I would like to jump in just real quickly. And so we're also doing a bunch of different outreach events, training. And it is really to combat the frustration and people being discouraged. I think one of the trainings that we're doing is really about what is power and what is powerlessness. What are the characteristics that make up each? and really asking communities, Native communities, as well as young people, to respond to where do we really see ourselves as a community, as a larger community on that scale of, you know, do we have a lot of power? Or are we really powerless, right? And really looking at voting as one tool in the toolbox. Because as you know, Native Americans, our history with the United States government hasn't always been smooth sailing, you know, to say the least.
Yeah.
the distrust of government, those sorts of things really do come to bear on a lot of our potential voters, right, folks to register to vote. And so really for us, it's really less about like trying to make voting the be-all, end-all, but really looking at it as one tool in the toolbox. And it is a tool that we need to use if we really intend to have the political leadership take our communities, our concerns seriously. So not to treat us as a sort of token vote and go out and take pictures with all our young people and, you know, put that picture on the wall, but really to look at, you know, are we really getting the resources that we need within our communities? You know, there's all these infrastructure deficits that tribes have, you know, sort of laid out their priority lists, that kind of thing. And I think the other thing is really we've looked at, like, what are young people being taught about politics, and just asking that question to people, like, what do you think about it? What do you feel about it? And it's a wide, wide range. You know, people on one hand, it's very, very important, all the way to like, they're all a bunch of corrupt fools anyways. That's so it's a wide range of feeling and what they're actually being taught about politics. And so we really challenge a lot of our folks to consider, I think there was a study done like in the mid-90s or so, and it looked at high school-aged civics classes. And it basically said if you came from a wealthy community, you were taught that politics was your opportunity, right? And if you came from a middle-class community, you were taught that politics was your duty. It's your job, mm-hmm. you know, civic duty. But if you came from a low-income community, you were either taught nothing or what's the point, right? It's kind of a boring topic. And, you know, it's been kind of rough because we've been, you know, doing this, busily going about doing these workshops. And I've sat in some high school classrooms where they look at each other like, do we have a civics class? And it's just like, oh, my God. You know, and right. And so you have to start like, well, maybe government and, you know, which is a very different topic when you're talking about the U.S. history or government classes. You're not really taught about how do you build power in a way that you can impact the decisions that are affecting your communities.
So picking up on your point of power and powerlessness, is there a connection between power and having resources and being those who vote?
Giovanna, I'm really glad you asked that question because I've been like chomping at the bit to actually bring up a counterpoint or a segue into what these ladies are saying. Resources is the key. I'm really blessed here in Bernalillo County to have a large budget and a lot of resources and, frankly, a fairly contiguous community. I mean, we have some rural parts. We have, you know, Tajajuli. We have Pajarito Mesa. We have, you know, Isleta to the south and things like that, Tijeras out to the east. But by and large, we have this very contiguous community in Bernalillo County. So I have a lot of money, and I can do things like vote centers here a lot more easily than a lot of our other county clerks. Most of our other county clerks in the smaller counties are struggling to meet huge demands with very few resources. And what I think that speaks to, and you know, some of them are really eager to do more, and,
sure.
and some of them are maybe not as eager. And my experience with why that is, though, is that as a society, as a community, as a state, as a country, you know, we need to start putting our money where our mouth is, where democracy is concerned. I mean, you know, elections don't run themselves and elections aren't free, and we can't keep shortchanging our election process and our and the outreach efforts and the education efforts that we need to do to people. And so to the extent that people feel powerless, say in you know, poor communities or in communities of color, things like that, or anywhere really, we're not doing enough to outreach to those communities and make people aware of their opportunities and trying to engage them in the process. And that takes resources. I'm not saying we should throw money at the problem. That's never the solution. But we are definitely not investing. We're not even investing enough to give our county clerks in the state the basics that they need to meet their statutory mandates, much less to do anything extra, much less to keep those early voting sites open longer hours. And you know, to the extent that it impacts women, I find, you know, women are the ones that are the most challenged around those scheduling issues, Lori, like you're talking about with trying to make those ends meet. You know, we have to take our kids to school in the morning. We have to pick them up. We have to take them to the doctor. We have to cook dinner. You know, we have to get them to their, you know, whatever they're doing. And so unless we can make some of those, opportunities, so that it is more convenient for people to participate, it is going to remain a challenge, I think.
And so here in Bernalillo County, we have a little bit more resources maybe than other counties. And you have, Maggie, implemented a pretty new program for voting that actually the other, Adrienne and Lori, you were referring to, which is going to increase access, hopefully, to those who are registered. Now, if you're not registered, it's not really going to help you. But right. If you're registered to vote, then your opportunities to vote are vastly expanded by through this program. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. I'll just speak to it briefly. And then, if the ladies want to add anything from their perspective, the vote center concept basically carries forward what we've already been doing here in Bernalillo County for the last several elections with early voting, which is you have a number of sites strategically located, conveniently located throughout the county, and now on election day as well. So rather than your one unique precinct that you've been tied to in the past, where you can only go to that precinct polling location on election day, we'll now have 69 vote centers open across the county on election day, and they're open to every voter in the county. So a voter can vote wherever is convenient for them, whether it's the one that's down the street or whether it's across town. We are really hoping that it will make voting easier and more convenient and that the voters will take advantage.
Great. And we did see this happen in the primary. So this is the first election cycle, but we've actually seen it in action in the primary election. And so now going into the general election, it will be fully up and running and ready to go. So that's exciting. Adrienne, let me ask you, in terms of the families and women that you've talked to across the state, how are people connecting the issues that are important to them in their daily lives with voting? I mean, I know you talked about this continuum of trying to get people engaged all year round, and it's not just about voting. Are people making the connection between the issues they care about and going to the voting booth?
Well, definitely Strong Families is trying to make that happen. This is definitely an issue-packed election, and there's a lot of things to consider. And so we're really trying to ask folks to, vote their values and realize that some of these things, elections matter because elected leaders can make bad decisions that actually hurt our families. So we're trying to say, if you're concerned about your health care, your child care, jobs, schools, basically our daily lives are really impacted by, elections. That's why it's so important that our communities are getting out there to vote. Yes, we're definitely seeing that women and families are really getting closely addressed to the pieces around how their health care is definitely something that's making people more engaged. And I think some of these one-on-one conversations around how we engage folks and really let them know that these are the issues that are at stake. That has been, we've been doing, so we have some social media stuff that we're hoping can highlight some of those issues and really get people to talk about their values. So as you see your cousin, sister, friend, talking about the values that matter to them, that you can, either align yourself with that or, figure out what really matters to you and which way you need to vote on that.
Lori, did you want to add anything to that? And I'm particularly interested in what you are doing in your organization in order to increase registration while registration was happening, but now that we're looking at voter turnout in the early and the election day.
Sure. So our organization, we are trying to build a more active and informed Native American electorate. So with that, we're a lot like Adrienne's group and her efforts to get people to look at issues on a much larger spectrum of time. So we do a lot of work at the state legislature, really looking at different sectors within the Native community. So like folks that are doing healthcare have done that for 20, 30 years. We have our Native American experts in there that really do understand the differences between one political platform to the next and how that really impacts working families, right? Same thing with education. And so on that level, like, we're really trying to, I guess, do two things. And one is, of course, to educate folks and not just educate them, but like to help people sort of collectively decipher how these policies actually hit our, you know, 0 to 4 year olds, you know, our kindergartners, our third graders, all this kind of stuff. And so we do a lot of get out the vote. We're doing a lot of phone banking and canvassing. And just to Maggie's point, it is true. I mean, a lot of the reservations, there's some parts of the reservation that is very nice and you can walk from door to door and knock, you know, but then it turns into farmlands and then you're going like, you know, miles and miles and asking like, does this road lead to this house and, you know, who lives yeah. there? And so it does get a lot tougher to, kind of get people, I guess, to do the canvassing and that kind of stuff. But what's new for us is that we've actually, we're working as a 501c4 tax, I guess it's a tax status, that allows us to do more endorsements on the statewide level. So we really are interested in, and I think with the national politic, looking at how kind of, I guess, the spread between all the polls and, you know, who's supposedly ahead to win. What the word is that basically a lot of the donors are looking then to take over local races, so like statewide races, state congressional races, state houses. And so for us, that's really where we need to put a lot of our efforts. So of course, we're watching the national politic. A lot of Native American issues fall within that federal, I guess, jurisdiction. A lot of our issues do. But also really looking at the local House, state and Senate, state House races. And again, looking to really identify those leaders that have really been helpful, that they're accountable to the issues that we're concerned about. And so we've identified like a little platform of different issues that we're working to try to get people a little bit more connected to a variety of races. And so like the minimum wage campaign is really important for us, you know, here in the city of Albuquerque. The social promotion bill to fail third mm-hmm. graders that don't read at third grade level is a bill that we oppose because we think it really goes to the heart of traditional language mm-hmm. revitalization efforts. You know, so it's mm-hmm. issues like that.
Mm. Adrienne, you wanted to say something.
I just wanted to say that, part of, I think, what a lot of our efforts are today is like a generation ago, at least like with my parents, I remember there always being this conversation that you don't talk about who you're going to vote for. And so we're really trying to shift that idea around really talking, and whether it's who you vote for or not, it's more of what the issues are that are going to be impacted if you don't vote, and to share your issues as with your family, with your communities, because that's the piece that gets people engaged in voting and starting to see, whether it's in your same generation or across generations, how important things like elections are.
Real quick, we have a couple minutes left, but what are you working on in terms of holding elected officials accountable after they get your vote?
That's a good question. We've actually done several different strategies when we felt like, you know, they're at this state legislature and they're about to vote wrong, or, you know, we start to work up a sweat about that. But really, like, calling into their district, letting folks know about the votes that are coming up. So in the past, we've done stuff on uranium issues, that kind of thing, and really wanting people to be a lot more transparent about how they're, you know, wheeling and dealing on issues like that. So that's just one way that we've done it.
Okay.
And part of the ways that we're also making sure that groups, that folks, as we spread this message, and that they're connected to groups doing the work on the ground, so that groups that are strong families partners, like Young Women United, Tewa Women United, El Centro de Igualdad y Derechos, and many others, are that they're connected with those groups so that they can work with them to hold them accountable through legislative sessions or petitions, whatever it may be.
And County Clerk Maggie Toulouse Oliver, what's any last thoughts from you and also your website for people to know where they can go vote?
Yes, absolutely. Well, obviously, voters within Bernalillo County, I'm really pushing people to our website. BurnCo.gov/clerk is our main homepage. But if people want voting information specific to them, to their voter registration, really pushing folks to our My Voter Information page, which is BurnCo.gov/MVI, they can get all of that custom tailored information about their district, where the nearest polling place is, how they can cast an absentee ballot, how they can track that ballot, where are the early voting sites nearest to them, election day, et cetera, et cetera. Just really want folks to visit that site and get all of that information for election day.
So to join and share your stories and your values, go to strongfamiliesmovement.org and you can take a picture of yourself. We have some great artwork to share how you want to impact this vote.
And Lori, if people want to contact your group.
Sure. We're at www.nativevotersalliance.org.
Great. Okay, and I have some more information just to give people the basics. The general election is on November 6th. The last day to register to vote was October 9th, so if you're not registered, you need to wait till next time. Absentee in-person voting opens on October 9th, so that's already open. The absentee ballot request deadline is November 1st, and then early voting opens in just over a week on October 20th and closes November 3rd. And again, new this year, and we talked about this, voters in Bernalillo County can now vote at any one of the voting centers, not only in their usual precinct location. And you can go to burnco.gov/myvotecenter for that information. Right. That's all we have time for today. I'd like to thank my guests, Adrienne Barboa, Maggie Toulouse Oliver, and Lori Wiocki.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For more information and links, you can go to prx.org or collectiveactionstrategies.com. I have a couple of announcements for you. There will be a woman moderator of a presidential election this year for the first time in 20 years. CNN's Candy Crowley is moderating the town hall debate on October 16th. ABC's Carol Simpson last moderated a presidential debate in 1992. So that's not to be missed. Also, the Early Childhood Action Network is planning its annual meeting called Turn the Curve, Every Child is Ready to Learn and Thrive on November 2nd. Go to earlychildhoodnm.com for more information. There will also be a women's health policy briefing on November 28th with National Women's Law Center. Go to collectiveactionstrategies.com for more information. This has been Women's Health Today. Women's Health Today is produced at the studios at KUNM in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Our engineer today was Ramon Garcia. Theme music composed and performed by Paul Presley. You can find a podcast of the show at KUNM.org. I'm Giovanna Rossi for Women's Health Today.